entangled.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 in Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org.
Good morning and welcome to your seat at the table. This is Janice Kovach. I'm here with Riley Karsh. And we are going to have a conversation today. 2 weeks ago, we talked about marijuana,
yes,
cannabis. And today, we're going to start a conversation on affordable housing.
Because we like to shy away from hard topics.
Yes. This is a very easy topic.
Yes, that's true.
The history itself. So just to give a little bit of history for those that don't know, affordable housing or the Council on Affordable Housing came about starting in the mid to late 70s and early 80s, town in New Jersey had decided that they would not allow a developer to build anything in that was considered affordable for low-income housing. So, of course, the developer took the town to court. It went up through the New Jersey Supreme Court, which the first decision was the Mount Laurel 1. And then the second time it happened was the Mount Laurel 2 decision, in which case the state then created the council through legislation, the Council on Affordable Housing, which was to oversee all of the town's 565 municipalities and their obligation, which is a constitutional obligation, to provide affordable housing for residents of New Jersey.
Right.
So that is, in a two-minute nutshell, the history of it. Obviously, the conversations can go much, much longer. And for a number of years, it worked. Right. The Council on Affordable Housing created rounds. So round one, which was the first round, an obligation was determined. And I think the big issue, and Riley, you can kind of jump in here, is how the numbers come about.
Yeah. So just to clarify a little bit, I mean, every municipality, so all 565 municipalities, have some level of affordable housing obligations. And there's all kinds of nuance to who has how much obligation and how, as Janice just said, how that's figured out or calculated. And so currently the calculations are unclear as to how decisions are being made exactly. And I think, like a lot of situations within New Jersey, because we have such a diverse range of communities, from, you know, all the way from rural to shore to city, that blanket rules and regulations with no sort of carve out or mobility within those rules and regulations to adjust for appropriateness of the municipality, is kind of how we wound up in a situation that we're in now, right? Where
Absolutely.
You have small towns being treated the same as rural communities being treated the same as cities, and that just
yes.
doesn't work fundamentally. So
it's not a cookie cutter.
Yeah, exactly.
It can't be a cookie cutter, and I think that's probably one of the struggles. And so round one came about, and there are towns that met their obligation and did what they were supposed to do, and there were other towns that didn't do what they were supposed to do and kind of let it slide through round one and then round two. And what you would do is, once you did whatever your obligation was, so say you needed to build 50 units, your community met that obligation, you would go to the Council on Affordable Housing and get what they would call substantive certification. Council would come in, review, say, yes, you've met it, so now you're protected from what would have been, you know, potentially a builder's remedy, where a builder would come in and say, oh, well, I'm going to meet your affordable housing obligation. Town says, no, we've met our affordable housing obligation. Right. We're protected. You can't come in and force excessive amounts of housing on us
right.
through that. There was also the opportunity until 2006 for towns to do a regional contribution agreement. So you could take, I think, up to 25% of your obligation. So a small rural town or township that, you know, really didn't have much in the way of utilities could pay another town, such as New Brunswick, Lambertville, cities that had that ability to provide the, you know, sewer, water, and other infrastructure needs. You could sell that obligation to another town. That was an opportunity for some towns to bring in newer housing, you know, towns like right. New Brunswick and Jersey City, where they had that infrastructure ability. 2006, that opportunity went away, and now towns are required to do their whole obligation.
Right, and you can see the pros and cons of that. I mean, the part of the downside of that ability to kind of sell off your obligation is that, you know, it becomes segregation in some respects. And so that is problematic. It's not something that I personally think is a good thing for people in general. However, that being said, if you're talking about affordable housing, you're often talking about particularly out here in Hunterdon, you're talking about senior citizens who frequently don't have access to transportation. So you know, putting an affordable housing development in the middle of a field with no transportation or services around it doesn't make a ton of sense for the people living there. So, you know, you have to balance, I think, the way in which you're looking at these things and the way that it's working out functionally versus kind of the ideal of it.
Right. All right. Well, we've got to do some quick commercial breaks, and then we'll come back and continue the conversation.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon.com. business-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
All right. We are back to having a conversation about affordable housing. And this is not going to be a one-show wonder.
No. Affordable housing is like... It's something that should be awfully simple and has turned into a very complicated, sort of messy situation for towns and residents and builders and everybody, I think.
And I think there's a lot of questions out there. You know, it's hard. In Clinton, we try to do meetings where we can explain and give people the opportunity to ask questions.
Yep.
Not everyone can always get to the council meetings, whether it's in their own town or in Clinton itself. So if you have questions, please reach out. You can reach out through the chamber.
Yep.
Or you can reach out to either Riley or I. Both of our emails are on the Town of Clinton website. I'm at jkovach@clintonnj.gov, and Riley is at rkarsh, K-A-R-S-H, at clintonnj.gov. Obviously, you can also call the municipal building and feel free to reach out to us in any way. Yep. If there's questions that you have, we may or may not be able to answer them for your specific community, but we can point you in the direction of where to go.
Absolutely.
That's really what our goal is to talk, not point fingers, but to really tell you what's going on, where you need to go to get the answers, and understand that, we talk about New Jersey being a home rule state. There are some things that we don't have the ability to change. Affordable housing is one of them. And it's keeping in mind that, to Riley's point, in a lot of cases, affordable housing is being used by seniors who are on fixed incomes. It's also being used by a lot of, recent college graduates, teachers, also those who are in either, in fire departments, police departments, who are just kind of coming out and starting. It gives them the ability to stay in New Jersey, to maybe even stay in the same communities they grew up in,
right. And
to be able to afford to live. This is really what affordable housing is meant to do. And something that I think is extremely important. I think where I struggle, and this is my frustration with it, is that a developer, when a town it's determined a town needs 10 affordable housing units, if the town doesn't have the money to actually build those 10 affordable housing units, and it is expensive, and the ability to access tax incentives in order to do it on your own is difficult, you now have a developer who is going to provide those units for you. But in addition to the 10 units, they're going to get 4 market rate units for every affordable unit that they build. So now your 10-unit building has now blossomed into 50 units and is obviously much larger and
right. Can
have more of a strain or an impact on the community.
Yeah. And if it doesn't make sense in the community, that's where you really run into trouble is if, like I said before, if you're in a farming community, for instance,
right,
and suddenly you're expected to have, a 50-unit apartment building, because typically when we're talking about affordable housing, we're talking about apartments. We're not talking about single-family homes or even townhomes generally. I mean, that can happen, but it's not commonplace, I would say, right? And so, balancing that, I think, is something that a lot of towns are struggling with, how to figure that out.
Right. No, it's true.
And how to manage that sort of scenario. We obviously are in a different position because we're in a town
right. Center.
Of course, we're also running out of space. So,
it does make it difficult.
Right? It becomes a challenge that I think it requires what we've been trying to do, which is, instead of being reactive, being proactive in planning for this kind of development in the future, which brings me to my favorite part about affordable housing is the possibility of economic stimulus and development in your communities. And so I think while it may be distressing to people to see that there's going to be development, especially out here, Hunterdon is a rural community. It's known for its parklands and its trails and its farmlands,
right.
And it's beautiful. And it's one of the many reasons I personally moved out here. And a lot of people live here, so no one wants to see, 10-story high-rises everywhere they look, right?
And we won't in Clinton.
No, sorry. No panic, anyone. No, we definitely won't in Clinton. But, you know, I think, I lost my train of thought.
Sorry. No one wants to see 10-story high rises.
But there is a loss of population in Hunterdon County. Yes. And so, you know, if you're looking to stimulate the economy and grow the population so we can continue to thrive here in Hunterdon County, you need to make it affordable. And to Janice's point, the people who are living in affordable housing are typically people just starting out or senior citizens. So these are folks that either have lived in this community their whole lives and right. are being driven out because yes. it's so everyone knows how expensive it is to live here. It's expensive.
Right.
Or they're just starting out and they want to raise their families here and contribute to our communities and have a great life in the way that we all do. And right. maybe they need a little assistance to get there. And then in the future, that's going to be your neighbor buying a house down the street, right? So I think if you can think about it in the long term as opposed to the immediate consequence, it becomes much more actually exciting and palatable, in my opinion.
Yes. You know, the biggest struggle, obviously, you know, especially for a town small like Clinton, we're 1.3 square miles, you're talking about potentially, you know, in the next 7 years, 300 new housing units. Yep. Coming in, you know, we're right off 78, and I've gotten plenty of phone calls in the last couple of weeks because there have been accidents on 78. We are, you know, you have old 22, you have 31 that comes through town.
Yep.
We get locked. So it's like you're not leaving your driveway because cars are everywhere.
Right.
People are just looking for a way out of the traffic. And there's just no easy way. And I don't know that
yeah.
we ever get there. So from that perspective, yes, we do understand, but at the same time, we managed to whittle down that number because originally, so in March of 2015, which was when this last round of litigation happened.
In Clinton.
In New Jersey overall.
Okay.
So, you know, Fair Share Housing, which is an advocacy group for affordable housing, decided to sue the state because the state was not pushing to meet its affordable housing obligations. There had been a kind of a destruction of the Council on Affordable Housing. You know,
right.
they were not staffed up. They also, the council was kind of let go. They couldn't get together to agree on rules because you have to have rules surrounding how you come up with your affordable housing number. So the numbers that the Fair Share Housing had provided through their expert was 200 new affordable housing units in the town of Clinton.
Right.
All right, so the town of Clinton has just under 1,000 housing units now. Now add to that the market rate, because, of course, the town would never be able to build. I mean, that you're looking at millions of dollars
yep.
to build 200 new units. So now you're going to double the existing housing stock in the town of Clinton.
Right.
As an example. And that was huge. And then finding, you know, then you'll have others that'll say, well, you should find a not-for-profit partner and let the not-for-profit build. Absolutely. But the not-for-profit partner needs some sort of financial incentive, whether it's through HMFA and their tax credits or whether it's through some sort of a pilot with the town. No matter what, there's an impact to the existing taxpayers. So trying to figure out how we do this in a way that it is minimal from an impact perspective while still obviously meeting our obligation. And we did. I mean, you know, we looked at where the numbers are and we really, from March of 2015 until December of 2018, you know, we worked to negotiate what the numbers should be with Fair Share Housing and with a developer who had a piece of property who, you know, many residents in the town of Clinton saw the initial plan, which was huge for this one particular piece of property. And, you know, through the negotiations, through the conversations, and really showing what we could support, what we could sustain, because obviously there's a limit to the amount of water we can draw out of
right.
the ground for our water, and a limit to the amount of sewer that can be processed through our sewer plant.
Yep.
So those are finite numbers, and that was, you know, what we used, as well as the school, as well as the other infrastructure of the roads to, you know, come up with the number that we came up with, which, yes, still seems overwhelming, but over a seven-year period, I'm hoping that we can, you know, transition it in a way that is smooth or not uncomfortable, not as bumpy.
Yes.
Not as bumpy. That's the perfect word for it. But, you know, it took a lot of work. I mean, there were multiple hours, thousands of hours spent by numerous people to, you know, to advocate and work on behalf of the town of Clinton. And I know, you know, obviously I can speak to Clinton, Riley can speak to Clinton, but knowing other mayors and other towns, there's a lot of effort that's been put in to fix something that's been broken for a lot of years.
Right. And do it in a way that is with the best interest of the town in mind.
Right.
Which, you know, is not always the easiest when you have competing interests coming into play. So I think I think our result is positive at the end of the day. It was painful to get there, but I do think it was positive at the end of the day, and I think it is going to provide a lot of opportunity for the town, especially since we're talking about a 7-year period. So nothing is – you don't want your town to stagnate. If your town stagnates, then it's going to fall apart and –
You become a bedroom community.
You do, and your tax rate's going to go up significantly, right? Because costs increase over time, and so your tax rate will increase over time to pay for those costs. So, you know, I think there is opportunity in the affordable housing scenario. Mm-hmm. I just think it's going to be painful in much the same way that it was painful for people when other developments were done decades ago. It's, you know... Change is hard. Most people don't tolerate change well right out of the gate, right? Because it's uncomfortable. You're comfortable. This is my town. This is how it's been.
Yes.
And now it's going to change. And so that can be very uncomfortable. And I personally try to be cognizant of that. As, you know, I'm a bit of a chameleon. I've lived everywhere for periods of time all over the country. So it's easier for me to adapt. So it takes some time to think about, okay, well, if you've lived in this one community your whole life, and, you know, I'm sure people who live in the town of Clinton and other places in Hunterdon have this experience where, well, I grew up here.
Right.
And, you know, you have these landmarks and they're your childhood, and then you get older and you come back and things change and change and change. And so that can be, very disconcerting, but I think if everyone comes to the table respectfully with that understanding in mind, I think we can have a really great outcome.
And I think the other piece of it is including residents in the conversation.
Absolutely.
I mean, we did 2 town halls.
Was it 2? It was at least 2. I don't know.
It was at least 2, maybe more than that. But the goal is to give people an opportunity. Obviously, listen, no one wants to see if you're looking right now at a beautiful farm field, the last thing you want to look at is more homes in your backyard.
Absolutely.
I get that. I completely understand. I think the issue that we face as elected officials is that's private property.
Right.
If it is currently owned by someone, you know, best case scenario is that we can negotiate rather than the courts dictating. And I'll use the example of, you know, Bedminster, I think it's Bedminster, you know, over by the hills there, that was supposed to be a couple of hundred units. And I think the township fought it, you know, thinking that they were on the right side of, you know, what was best for their community. And they wound up with a lot more housing than even they anticipated. So, you know, with that, I think it's something that's important. We do have to go to a quick news break, and then we'll come back and continue the conversation.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump and First Lady Melania receiving a royal welcome at Buckingham Palace this morning, featuring all of the pomp and circumstance of an official state visit, greeted by Queen Elizabeth, Prince Charles, and his wife, hours after arriving in Great Britain for the 3-day visit. Before landing, President Trump criticized London's mayor, Sadiq Khan, after Khan criticized Trump's visit.
No, I don't think much of him. I think that he's the twin of de Blasio, except shorter.
The president referring there to Bill de Blasio, New York City's Democratic mayor. Storms across the...
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? fish oil, or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
Okay, we are back. To continue the conversation, and we did have a question explaining the difference between affordable housing, low income, moderate income, and Section 8. So affordable housing is the general term used in New Jersey to meet the what your obligation is. Section 8 is actually a voucher that residents apply for based on their income and can get to assist to cover some of their housing costs. Now, that doesn't mean that if they have a Section 8 voucher that they automatically go into an affordable unit. In some cases, there are Section 8 vouchers being used to offset the cost of a full rental unit. And I think there's this misnomer about Section 8 and who qualifies for Section 8. Again, Section 8 in Hunterdon County, there's probably, I think the last I heard, there's less than 500 Section 8 vouchers in the county right now. A number of them are seniors.
I think from my understanding, the vast majority of the Section 8 vouchers in Hunterdon County specifically go to senior citizens on fixed incomes.
Right. And then there are a few, you know, obviously others who
Qualify
as well.
Right.
The affordable housing, they're income qualified. So one of the reasons why rentals are much more palatable is because obviously as an individual on a fixed income, qualifying for a mortgage can be much more difficult. You know, you have to meet different guidelines. Even though you have income requirements, a mortgage company is still going to require other assets that you may or may not have.
And you typically get a much higher interest rate, and it's just much harder for people who need low-income housing to qualify for a mortgage and then afford that mortgage.
Correct.
So
you have what we call low and moderate. So low is the income levels, and these are all based on federal guidelines. Under $30,000 and under would be someone with a low. So if that's where your income is, especially, you know, there are families of four who are trying to live on $30,000 or less,
They
would qualify for low-income housing. Moderate, you're going up into mid-50s.
52, last time I looked.
52, okay.
000. It's based, just to clarify, it's based on the median income here in Hunterdon County, which when I looked, I think this was last year, so please don't hold me to this number, but the last time I looked, the median income in Hunterdon County was around $102,000.
Yes.
A year. And so the way that they calculate low-income housing is based off of that median income for the county. So that the point is that they try to base the low-income housing requirements on the actual circumstances of the community. So, you know, in theory, what you have is people who, you know, the vast majority of people make X number of dollars a year. And so in order for us to have affordable housing in that community, you look to that number and you kind of manipulate it into a lower number, which we wound up with this 52,000. Of course, I think everyone knows statistics are complicated. And so while the median income in Hunterdon County might be $102,000, if you have, you know, a lot of people making millions of dollars and a lot of people making a lot less, and you aggregate that and then come out with an average, it's a little skewed. So just bear that in mind when you're thinking about these numbers and how they're calculated. But as Jana said, I think to answer the question, the low-income housing rules are separate than Section 8 housing. These are two separate
Completely.
Programs. So Section 8 housing is something that a lot of people are afraid of. And I don't want to get too deep into that other than to say it's not a movie. It's not, you know, it's not what you're seeing even on television, on the news. It's
right.
People who need assistance, typically on a fixed income for some reason.
Right.
And the county or the state or the federal government is able to step in and help those folks out. And that's, as Jana said, a voucher program, whereas the low income, you have to qualify for it based on your income.
Right.
And it's a whole different program.
Right. And the Section 8, you're qualifying for it as well. It's yes. not, you know, I will just say this. There's fear when you create fear around some sort of around Section 8 or around low and moderate income. Stop and think. I mean, there are a lot of people that we know that need these services to help them. And we want to get people to economic self-sufficiency. We want people to be able to live in communities, you know, where they grew up or where they want to raise their kids.
Right.
You know, to Riley's point, I grew up in Clinton. I left for a while, but the minute I had my kids, it was time to go home. I wanted my children to experience that small town feel that I had growing up. And it's so important that we not look at one another based on income or based on, you know, what kind of a house we're living in, but really it's about embracing everyone who wants to be a part of our community, because that's how we're going to grow our community.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone wants to live in the Stepford Wives world, right? Where everyone looks and sounds and does the exact same thing all the time.
So, I'd break that mold immediately. I got the rainbow going today.
Exactly. So having that diversity, even in income levels, brings a world of good to the community. It brings flavor, brings out, you know, interest, it brings different ideas, and all of that is a benefit. All of that is a good thing for other people.
Right.
So, you know, I encourage people to really research on their own what these things mean and the reality of them versus kind of what we all grew up with in the movies or what you've seen, you know, in the media, you know, sensationalized right. or any of those things. So that's my soapbox moment.
And I think that's the biggest struggle for a lot of people. You know, it's fear of the unknown. You know,
sure.
We've talked about this. Not only are you bringing in potentially 300 new apartment units. So in a town like Clinton, which has been a majority owner occupied, mm-hmm. non-rental, you're now kind of skewing the numbers a little bit, which we've talked about publicly. Yes, we are going from a 75% owner occupied, 25% rental to probably closer to a 60-40.
Yep.
And it's okay. Again, you know, even with home ownership, there are people who will treat the community as a bedroom community. It's I go back here to just sleep and eat, and then I go back to work and I
yes.
leave the county.
Yep.
It you know, that's always been the case.
Yeah.
What we want to do is, and obviously, you know, people come to Clinton because they see and they feel what we have to offer.
Yeah.
You know, they love the downtown. You know, what kid doesn't like going into a candy store or an ice cream
or
shop?
Mine love it, quite
yes,
frankly.
So do mine.
So much.
And then, you know, while they're there, I can go grab a coffee.
Yep.
You know, that's the beauty of it. And there's so much that we have going on with, you know, events and activities that it really is a great place to be able to raise a family.
Absolutely.
Or start a family.
Absolutely. And it's such a, you know, the last place I lived was Brooklyn. And while I loved living there, my husband and I noticed as soon as we moved out here, you know, you'd walk down the street and everybody would say hello to you.
Yes.
And of course, our instinct was, well, we don't have any money. We just bought a house. Don't ask us for money. And of course, it was, you know, it was just the friendly
right.
nature of the community. And I think that that's such a draw and such a benefit for people. And I don't see that changing because we add rental apartments to our community. I think people are people. You're going to have great people and not as great people in every
absolutely
every place, right? It doesn't matter if they own their house or not. It's just the way it is. And you never know what's going on inside somebody's home. Just because somebody technically owns their house, that maybe they're about to lose their house. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they don't like the community. Maybe they love the community. You just don't know
right.
what's happening. And so if we can get beyond the assumptions and look at the reality of the circumstances, I think we'll all be a lot better off for it.
And I think people stay in a community because that's what they're looking for. If someone's not looking for a community like ours where everyone knows your business, then obviously they will learn quickly that Clinton is not where they want to be.
Right, exactly.
I think those are the key things to keep in mind.
Yeah.
We do have to do a couple of quick commercial breaks, so we will be back in a moment.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, we are back for our last 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
We did have a question about, you know, what we're going to see in Clinton, and we'll spend a few minutes just talking about what happens in Clinton. So, like I said, we have come up with our settlement. It was approved by the court. It was signed off on by the intervener who owned a piece of property in town. So, overall, over the next 7 years, there's going to be I think it's just at 300 new apartment units. So, and they'll be in multiple places throughout the town, as well as a couple of, you know, the market rate. So for those of you who are in Clinton, know the Movis property, there will be 56 high-end townhomes up on that particular piece of property, which is much better than the original 247 garden apartments that were proposed there.
Right.
There will be the affordable component of that, since that is kind of set off from, it's only off the highway, that their component is always is going to be over on West Main Street. It will be 10 age-restricted units to meet their obligation. There is, part of our plan will be over at the AMP, apartments over there, along with a mixed use, so there'll be commercial, if all goes well. The commercial downstairs with apartments upstairs.
Right.
There will be over at the Global Ag property additional townhomes, both for sale and rent, as well as some affordable housing units there.
And some commercial space.
And commercial
there
space,
as well.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of, you know, mixed with the commercial.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, the property that's right next to the Shell station has been purchased. And there will be a couple of units there. In addition, the part of our plan, again, all privately owned property, so the town is not driving the development. These were plans that were delivered, you know, to the town of Clinton, knowing that they had to meet an affordable housing obligation component of it as well. There's also plans for a building over near the Holiday Inn. They have a larger parking lot, and they're looking to do a building over there as well.
Right.
So that's going to be what we'll see in the town of Clinton. You know, again, not to speak for any other municipality, but we all of us as elected officials, whether it's in Clinton or any of the other towns, work hard to do the best possible and meet the obligations. And maybe not everyone communicates that as well as they should. It's not exactly easy. It's not easy to explain. As you know, I've been doing this now for so many years, and I still struggle with how to actually put into words how to get it across so that someone can understand it in 100 words or less and not 3 hours.
Right, and well, people use terminology interchangeably that doesn't actually mean what they think
right.
It means, and so it gets very confusing. So just from the town perspective, that may feel overwhelming to people because it's a lot of development.
It is.
So that's the sort of negative on it. But the great news is that that is a way for the town to create some economic sustainability, which is, if anyone saw me walk to their door when I was running for office, the whole reason, not the whole reason, but a big part of the reason I wanted to be an elected official was to help the town with my life experience find a way to become more sustainable in a changing environment.
Right.
And so this gives us the opportunity to clean up Old 22 in some ways, right? So that it feels more like it's a part of the town. So that people don't just get off exit 17 and drive to exit 15 and have no idea that there was a town there.
Right. There's anything to
say. You know, that, oh, I should stop and have lunch, or I should get a coffee, or I should, you know, buy cheese, whatever, whatever it is. You can tell what's on my mind. So I think, you know, from me, I've had a lot longer to sit with this, so it's easier for me to see the positive side of it, that we, you know, that we really as a community can come up with some direction forward to help our existing business community, but also to grow it and create jobs and create places that our kids maybe want to come back to and work at. And
right.
That, you know, people were more, even more of a destination. I know we're the most, you know, the Red Mill is the most photographed building in the state, but you know, Janice and I are hyper competitive. We want to be the best all the time.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
We want to make those number one lists all the time.
Exactly. So, to the extent that we can take this obligation that we mm-hmm. can't avoid, and in my opinion, we shouldn't be trying to avoid, and make it into a positive for the town, that's what we're going to do. And so, if anyone has ideas and thoughts on how that should look or what should happen, you know, you should always feel free to reach out to us. I can't promise you we can make it happen, but it's in the two
right.
town halls we had, great ideas came out, and not all of them came to fruition, but having those conversations is a big part of governance and a big part of the way in which Clinton has done so well is by having these sort of transparent conversations with our community, because we're here to represent,
right?
You know, and not dictate. So it's helpful when people share information. If you could do it without yelling at us, that would be super.
But if you need to yell, we get it.
If you need to yell, we can take it too. But I think it's an opportunity for the town. If we can start thinking about it in terms of, okay, this is happening, let's drive it forward.
Right. Let's be in the driver's seat.
Exactly.
Not in the passenger
exactly.
seat.
Exactly.
And that's – so just to kind of – you know, we've talked obviously locally and the impact of it. You know, the biggest struggle I think that we have is, you know, what is this – because right now the courts are deciding what a town's obligation is. They're using courtmasters who may or may not have experience in either planning or, you know, whether preservation. You know, they could have worked for developers. You know, this constant conflict that seems to be going on,
right.
And really no one knows a community better than its residents and elected officials. And what I've struggled with and have said from the beginning at all of our town halls is that you know, I feel as I've been a passenger in a bus that was driven into a brick wall, and the driver abandoned us, and now we're left to deal with the consequences of this obligation. And while I don't dispute that there is an obligation, how we come about with the obligation is my struggle. I will say, and I put this out there for a number of people, legislators, is that Massachusetts seems to do it right. They have a statute on the books which says 10% of all your existing housing stock must be affordable, and if you build any new housing stock, 20% of it must be set aside for affordable. So if you don't have the ability to build, if you don't have the infrastructure or the appropriate location, and there's no more building being done, guess what? It's not appropriate for you to put it in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But if you're going to build, then this is what you have to do.
It's a supply and demand method.
Right.
Which, from an economic standpoint, makes a lot of sense, right? Because if there's no demand for housing in a community,
right,
and then you're being forced to build housing, it's just going to sit empty.
Right.
So from that perspective, it makes a lot more sense to think about it that way.
And then this way, you know, right now, if you ask five different people how they come up with the obligation number for a town, no one can give you a straight answer.
No.
You know, you've got different economists doing calculations based on, I'm going to say God knows what, because I don't know how they come up with some of that stuff.
No.
And then you're negotiating from there. So I'd much rather know that if I'm going to have a development, then I have to make sure that the developer knows that 20% set aside. And this has worked in Massachusetts. You know, New Jersey being a home rule state, I'm sure that someone will have a reason why this can't work. But I'm going to throw it out there to the legislature again. You know, while we need to be able to manage our obligations, we also need, obviously, the state to help us with that as well, and right, not leaving it to the courts.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason at this point other than, well, I can't even think of the reason why there's not been a bill passed.
Right.
There's not even been a bill out of committee to address this issue and give some sort of structure to the process. Because as we started out talking, Newark is not the same as Flemington, is not the same as Bethlehem Township, is not the same as Cape May County. All of these towns have nuance to them. And so if you're going to just leave it to the whim of somebody who may not have ever even visited the town,
right,
you wind up with some sort of, you know, difficult consequences, I think. And so, you know, creating a structure around it will give a level of certainty to towns that doesn't currently exist. So you can do what we have been trying to do, which is plan proactively, which is good, sound planning, right? As opposed to reacting.
Right, which unfortunately too many towns have been forced to react to situations, and that puts – that's what I think – adds the negative connotation to affordable housing is, you know, well, my elected officials are allowing 3,000 units to be built. Well, that may not have been communicated that 3,000 came down from 6,000.
Right.
And, you know, they've been negotiating. So, you know, before anyone makes assumptions, ask the questions, I think is my only advice, you know. And listen, could someone have done it wrong? Possibly. I'm not going to, you know, I can't speak for every other, you know, 564 other communities in this state. But, you know, from the perspective of the people that I work with, you know, the meetings that we go to, both Riley and I spend time, you know, statewide meeting with other elected officials, you know, we all struggle. Most of us are part-time. This is not a, you know, no one's getting paid full. No, I shouldn't say no. Most of us are not getting paid full time to do this. Some get paid nothing to do this and are doing it because they have a passion for it and they want to do what's best for the community. So, you know, bear that in mind as you're, you know, having these conversations, but ask the questions.
Right.
And if you have a question that, you know, you want us to try and get an answer to, send it over. More than happy.
You can always comment on our Facebook live feed as well.
Yes.
We've been trying. That's why I'm weirdly looking over to the side. I've been trying to make sure that
we're not missing anything.
We're not missing any questions. So, you know, we're happy to answer whatever we can.
We are. And with that, we are going to do our last commercial break and go to the news. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week, or you'll hear us next week.
Yes, you'll hear us next week. Thanks, guys.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump visiting historic Westminster Abbey in London at this hour after placing a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Warrior. Earlier today, Queen Elizabeth gave the Trumps a tour of parts of Buckingham Palace. News photographers capturing the group viewing the Queen's vast royal collection of gifts and historical memorabilia. The President and First Lady also had a private lunch with the Queen as they begin a three-day state visit. After considering challenging President Trump in 2020 for the White House nomination, Republican Maryland Governor Larry Hogan says he's made his final decision, tweeting that he appreciates the encouragement from people around the nation who urged him to run, but he says he won't be a candidate and will instead focus on his second term as governor of Maryland. And this is USA Radio News.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to health care sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or pay back loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Congress is still talking about impeachment proceedings for President Trump. On CBS's Face the Nation, GOP Senator John Kennedy gave his take on the subject.
Impeachment polls right up there with skim milk among the American people. But my advice to my Democratic friends is, if you want to do it, go hard or go home.
House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff is not ready to go home and told ABC's This Week he's not ready to impeach either.
I think if it is a close calls go against putting the country through that. We have an important legislative agenda to try to advance. We have important oversight work we can do outside the context of impeachment. And I think at this point that is still the preferred course.
The President and First Lady are off traveling to distant locations again for more diplomatic visits. On Monday, they'll be in the UK for meetings with the royal family at Buckingham Palace. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Presidential candidate Joe Biden is bashing President Trump's human rights record. USA's Chris Barnes reports.
Biden speaking at an LGBT Pride Month event in Columbus, Ohio on Saturday. And the former VP accuses Trump of not taking a strong stand in favor of basic human rights for all.
This White House has literally a bully pulpit.
is callously extending his power over the most vulnerable, implementing discriminatory policies like Muslim bans, turning away asylum seekers, putting children in cages.
Also speaking of his policies concerning the LGBTQ community, Biden promising the first thing he'd do if elected president is to get the Equality Act passed if it still were not already approved by Congress.